Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast on the VSiN Podcast Network. Always appreciate you guys tuning in. It's JVT. Jacob is not alongside today. He's going to be with us next week as we are recording in a different situation. Doug Kazarian, though, is going to be with us. We're going to have a nice chat with Doug. Doug is a very big Lakers fan. He's going to give us the perspective on Los Angeles. Obviously, a very important, I'd say, 3 or 4 weeks coming up for the Lakers as they have not looked good without LeBron James, and we're going to get into some of the specifics of how they have looked, their offense, everything in between. But the Lakers will be the center of our interview with Doug, and then, of course, we'll talk about a couple of things in the Western Conference, touch on a few things with the Brooklyn Nets, and a little bit about James Harden as well. But we start with our hardwood headlines, as we usually do, and there's a lot of big names, a lot of injuries, and this is something that we discussed, right, a lot, and I say the collective we, anybody who follows the league, the compact nature of the schedule was potentially going to lead to a lot of injuries, right? And injuries are kind of at the forefront of our episode today. You know, there's a lot to discuss. We start with Joel Embiid. Now, this is a positive note in terms of an injury, but Joel Embiid expected to return on Saturday against the Minnesota Timberwolves. That was reported by Shams Charania of the Athletic Stadium as well. We know Shams. And it looks like Philadelphia is going to get their guy back. And there's a lot of tentacles that like spray out from this topic and this event right here, if Embiid does indeed return to the floor over the weekend. So I wanted to go over a couple of things because I think Philadelphia has been a really fascinating team, especially since Joel Embiid has been gone. If you look at what they have done without Joel Embiid, right? You know, we talked about this, winless without Joel Embiid on the floor for a very long amount of time this season. And then, of course, they start to even things out in this last nine-game stretch. We're talking about 6-3 straight up, 5-3-1 against the spread, a plus 6.5 net rating. Today is Thursday, right? They have a game coming up against the Cleveland Cavaliers later tonight. So by the time you listen to this, potentially that one will be in the book, so you can add to that record however that game goes down. But this is a team that's played extremely well since Joel Embiid came back, but extremely well defensively. What the Philadelphia 76ers have done on the defensive side of the floor without Joel Embiid has been absolutely fantastic. That 6.5 net rating that I just discussed, it's courtesy of a defensive rating that has only given up 102.6 points every 100 possessions. They've been absolutely unreal, and they've been carrying an offense that has largely been inefficient. They're only scoring 109.1 points every 100 possessions since they've lost Joel Embiid. It was a big reason why when Embiid was off the floor, you saw all of these poor numbers. Remember, at one point, they were negative 11 in terms of their net rating just with Joel Embiid off the floor this year. And now we're talking about the last nine games being 6-3 over nine and, of course, that plus 6.5 net rating. But think about that. Their offensive rating without Joel Embiid over those nine games, that's good for 18th in the NBA over that nine-game stretch. And yet, because of the defense and the level at which they have played, they're fourth in net rating. It's absolutely incredible. They lead the league in defensive efficiency since Joel Embiid has been out with this injury. And I think just from an anecdotal standpoint, that's absolutely incredible in terms of a team really rallying and moving forward without their best player, especially when we knew what this team was prior to that. And the thing about it is, they still clearly need Joel Embiid. You know, I hear a lot of, hey, what does this do for Joel Embiid's MVP case, right? The fact that they've done so well. I still think if you're really parsing hairs here, if you're looking at what is Joel Embiid's worth, yes, defensively, do they do fine without him? Absolutely, right? You lead the league in defensive efficiency. Still need him on offense. It's pretty clear that they still need him on offense. But what has happened since Joel Embiid has been out of the lineup, I think has been absolutely incredible, and I think this team needs to be commended for that. And here's the thing, too. It's not only just defensively, you know, leading the league and doing what they've been able to do, but think about this: since losing Joel Embiid, they've also staved off a couple of the teams that were gunning for them in terms of the top overall seed. As of today, they are a half game behind Brooklyn, but if they win the game, they would take that lead back and take the number one overall seed back. But Brooklyn just surpassed Philadelphia the other day. To make it this hard on the teams that have been playing so well around them in Milwaukee and Brooklyn, and to stave them off and to maintain some semblance of a grip on the number one overall seed despite losing Joel Embiid is absolutely great. So now we talk about Embiid, because there's another fascinating angle to this, and it's obviously that most valuable player award. And a lot of people like to talk about this. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast. And, you know, it's a little bit of a played-out topic, so we won't spend a lot of time on it. But this is clearly something that we have to discuss in terms of the development of the market, because Joel Embiid, when he left, was separating himself from the pack in terms of most valuable player, had become the favorite to win the award. Right now, if you're talking about most valuable player, about 2 days ago, a lot of odds are off the board because of James Harden's injury, which of course we'll get to, in the range of about 7-1. So with Embiid coming back, coupled with the James Harden injury, again, this most valuable player race just gets tossed up over on its head. And Nikola Jokic is still performing very well. We talk about Jokic with Doug Kazarian. But this MVP race, which has been fascinating throughout the entire year, gets another layer added to it with the presumed exit of one James Harden and the return of one Joel Embiid. So Embiid is back. He's going to come back again over the weekend. Potentially Minnesota would be the opponent. So we'll see. And the Embiid angle to this, by the way, as we look at, okay, it's always, is there value on Embiid? Is there value on player X? Philadelphia will have 24 games left on their schedule by the time Joel Embiid returns on Saturday, again, assuming that he does. They have 6 back-to-backs remaining on that schedule. Is Embiid going to play in every single one of those situations, right, with his knee injury? Because if you think about it, you'd think they'd be pretty cautious given the compact nature of this schedule and that he's due to miss a few more games just due to rest and making sure that knee is right. If he does play in every game going forward, that puts him at 55 of 72 games, or 76.4% of his team's games. If that happens, is that enough for him to still win the award, assuming that he maintains his pace of play that he had before he got injured? If he plays every single game since coming back, personally, I would say he would still, of course, be in the mix, especially if Philadelphia takes the first overall seed. But I just think the long shot here is not Joel Embiid doing enough to win the award. The long shot is Joel Embiid playing in every single game so that he only misses 76.4%. I'm terrible at math, so we'll say that he plays in 76.4% of the game. It's a podcast. I know I could probably stop and figure out the math, but I'm a real one. Don't really want to do that. So Embiid comes back, and that offense for Philadelphia should be better. And a Philadelphia team whose power rating had been an all-time high in our power rankings in points per weekly, it put them second, just considering how well they had played this past week and how well they continue to play. But Philadelphia now gets healthier and gets some continuity defensively, and that really helps them in the big picture. So let's talk about Harden, because James Harden, for those who didn't see it, you probably have by the time you hear this, injures his hamstring 27 minutes through the first 3 quarters of their win over Houston on Wednesday night. Shams Charania again reporting, quote, "I'm told James Harden is fine. He's expected to be day-to-day with his hamstring tightness, and this is not believed to be a long-term injury." Now, I tweeted this out earlier today, again, recording on Thursday, about how, you know, that long-term, That phrase really stuck out to me. I was like, wow, that sounds familiar. Why does that terminology sound familiar? It's a common phrase, obviously. But the situation, it was like deja vu. And sure enough, I go back. And it's a phrase that we have heard before. It's a phrase we've heard before from the Brooklyn Nets. And it's a phrase we've heard before from Steve Nash. February 15th, Steve Nash doesn't think Kevin Durant's hamstring injury is, quote, a long-term thing. That was February 15th. We have yet to see Kevin Durant. So I don't know if James Harden is seriously injured. Indications, again, from Sharanya and others, are that it's not serious. The worry here is that the Nets are just going to be overly cautious, like they have been with Kevin Durant, like they were with Blake Griffin when he was making his way onto the team. I hate to say it, but the fat lady may be warming up her pipes on our campaign for James Harden to win the most valuable player, mainly because I think the Nets are going to start to hold him out here a little bit. Now, again, when you're listening to this, Thursday will probably be passed. They have a massive game here against the Charlotte Hornets, one that puts me in quite the position, by the way, because I really hope the Hornets win, because that would put me one win away from clinching in that over on that win total. Also, it would very much strengthen the case for James Harden that the Nets need him. I would love a Hornets blowout today. At the same time, when Harden was announced that he was out, was something I assumed, the Nets, who are a 3-point favorite, dropped down to a 2-point favorite on the market. So I won't spend a lot of time on that. Obviously, this is a delayed thing, but it sets up a fascinating situation here for the MVP race and for James Harden and for Brooklyn. Look, Sharanya reported that Durant is, quote, closing in on a return to the floor. You know, I'm tired of hearing, by the way, the nonsense from Brooklyn. If it was the playoffs, he would. But it's been a month and a half. Like, there's nothing wrong with what they're doing at all. But you don't got to play. Like, we're not dumb. It's a relatively serious injury. He should be resting. But don't give us if it was the playoffs, he would play. It seems kind of transparent that he was seriously injured. You don't need to play the game. So, as we move forward again, as of this recording, a majority of spots, the MVP odds are off the board. We'll check FanDuel, too, because FanDuel, for the most part, when I have seen all of these, you know, issues pop up, right, in terms of injuries and markets having to be adjusted, we talk about MVP, we talk about Rookie of the Year with all of those serious injuries. I'm reading. FanDuel Sportsbook has done a pretty good job of adjusting. Now, PointsBet is still up for MVP. Nikola Jokic minus 121, James Harden 4-1, Giannis Antetokounmpo 6-1, Joel Embiid at 8-1. I'm not saying, I don't think he's dead. I think Jokic has very much got a lot of moral support behind him, but it's weird. When I take in NBA media, there is a lukewarm approach to the analysis of Nikola Jokic and his ability to win most valuable player. Over at FanDuel, minus 130 on Jokic, James Harden 5-1, Embiid 5-1. And you're going to start to see those 5-1s pop back up as Embiid hits the floor and as we get closer. So if you're in that market with a points bet, you can grab that 8-1 on Joel Embiid. I would assume that will be shortened, but again, you're taking a risk because you really need him to play a majority, if not every single one of these games. I just really think that's highly doubtful. One more bit of injury news to get to. Andre Drummond injured his toe in the Lakers' debut on Wednesday night. Dude, how about this? So it's a bruised right toe. He's considered day-to-day. Came back in the second quarter, couldn't play through it. How about this quote from Drummond? Quote, I came back in the second quarter, and it was hurting a little bit more. And then after halftime, I finally took my sock off to look, and my whole toenail was gone. So it was just all bad from there. I couldn't walk or run, so I just told Coach Frank Vogel to take me out. So I've never lost a toenail or a fingernail. That sounds absolutely painful. Markieff Morris was quoted after the game saying that, yeah, you know, I've lost a toenail before and actually played the next game, but it hurt. It hurt and it felt weird and it wasn't the same in terms of my explosiveness for a while. So we will see what they're going to do with Andre Drummond. But look, I don't think Andre Drummond is some savior that was going to right the ship for the Los Angeles Lakers, but every player is needed, right? All hands on deck. This injury is not going to help anything. They lost to Milwaukee last night, 112-97. Now they're just a half game ahead of Denver and Portland. Both of those teams, by the way, 29-18. So theoretically, again, by the time you're listening to this, the Lakers could be the sixth seed by the time you hear this. They're just four games ahead of Dallas for the first play-in seed, right? That seventh spot. And their schedule, man, their schedule is brutal. They start up a six-game road trip on Sunday that eventually goes to the East Coast. How about this? At the Clippers, at the Raptors, at the Heat, at the Nets, at the Knicks, which is the front end of a back-to-back, which ends against the Hornets. That's a tough schedule, man. I know a lot of people will be like, it's the Eastern Conference. The Lakers are in a really bad spot right now. Offensively, this team is one of the worst teams in the league right now without LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the floor. Since they lost LeBron James, oh, and quickly, by the way, before I get to those offensive numbers, should follow up that schedule bit with telling you that after that road trip, they come back home for three games, Boston, and then a two-game series with Utah. Like, this is a realistic conversation about them, the Lakers, participating in a play-in game. It's extremely realistic, especially when you look at some of these numbers. Offensively, their efficiency, 99 points every 100 possessions since they've lost LeBron. That includes the Hawks game in its entirety. They lost LeBron in the second quarter, so take that as you will, but it gives you still a pretty good picture of how bad this offense is. Again, includes the Hawks game, which LeBron was lost to injury. Offensive efficiency, 99 points every 100 possessions. They're shooting 42.7% from the floor, 31% from three-point range. Their highest individual game offensive rating was against the New Orleans Pelicans. They managed a 103.2 in a 128-111 loss to the 28th-ranked defense in the league. Think about that. If you've taken in any of my content, you know, like you realize how bad the Pelicans are. It's something I've talked on quite a bit. Oh, man. An offensive rating of 103 against that defense. The Pelicans are playing better. They're our streaky team of the week. Check out those power rankings, by the way, open Point Spread Weekly. Over these seven games, too, they have shot above 62% at the rim one time. That was against Cleveland, a really decent 63.9% on 36 attempts. So they got no presence within 4 feet of the basket. They're a poor shooting team. Their offense has just hit the tank. You even go back to that Bucks game last night. I bet the under, which we're going to talk about the under angle, but you bet the under in the first quarter, they hit at least eight. They hit eight three-pointers in the first quarter. It's absolute madness the way that they're shooting the ball, the Lakers. And then they really slow down in the second, third, fourth quarter. The game ends up going under the total. This team, I just don't know where they're going to generate offense from in the weeks that are coming. You know, Talen Horton-Tucker, he's improved a lot, but he can't be one of your main creators of scoring in isolation. You know, Dennis Schroeder, they're running so much of their offense through him. He can only carry you so far. It's going to be incredible to see what the standings look like by the time LeBron James comes back. And we should know, you know, Brian Windhorst noted in his podcast, Hoop Collective, one of the things I listen to quite a bit, that he expects LeBron to come back, you know, sooner rather than later, whatever that means. Right? I would assume that just means on the front end of that 4 to 6 week timetable. Especially if he sees what's happening with this team, right? But that's... it's something to really keep track of, and it would be something that's incredible for the NBA and also something that could be a nightmare for the NBA, having the Los Angeles Lakers, LeBron James, in prime time in a play-in game to get into the postseason. And what that does, by the way, to throw the bracket into chaos, if they're the seventh seed, if you're Utah or Phoenix and you have to handle the Lakers, how about the Clippers? The Clippers are two games out of Phoenix for the second overall seed and the lead in the Pacific Division. You're talking about a potential Lakers-Suns or Lakers-Clippers first-round matchup. Again, that's if they had this happens, but that's just insane to think about. So the unders for the Lakers in these seven games are 1-6 to the under. You know, I went through all of the numbers offensively, but one of the low-key things that has really helped with these unders is the fact that the Lakers still, to give Frank Vogel credit and to give this coaching staff credit and this team, still really good defensively. Still a top-five defense in terms of efficiency since losing LeBron James. Give it up just 104.8 points every 100 possessions. So, while their offense has been terrible, their defense has still been really, really good. It has been the one calling card of this Lakers team throughout this entire season. It's been the one reason why I really just refuse to kind of give up on them. And I wouldn't even say give up. Just refuse to worry to a certain extent. Because even without AD, and now even without LeBron and AD, they continue to play defense at a really high level. And that's going to maintain itself once LeBron and Anthony Davis come back. And it's just figuring out the offense and figuring out the shooting issues once you get into the postseason, which, by the way, we saw last year. The shooting issues didn't really matter that much when you're the best defense in the NBA. But I do wonder if the Lakers' unders are starting to come to an end here. You know, we got an interesting matchup against Sacramento coming up on Saturday. You know, I wrote about it in the game notes on Thursday. That Sacramento, from a defensive standpoint, right, we know 30th in the NBA in defensive efficiency. Over the last month, average total in their games has been about 232.5. You're talking about a Lakers team whose average total has been about 215 since they lost LeBron to injury, and they've gone under the total in 6 of 7. So part of my worry is that this team, which is still attempting to get some work within 4 feet of the basket, can exploit some of the issues that Sacramento has. Sacramento itself being a very good offensive team, being able to score with them, and this potentially being an overplay. But we'll get to that on Saturday. I think it's a really fascinating thing to track. All right, really quickly, before we get to Doug Kazarian, I wanted to know two things really quick. One, so I added a ticket in Most Improved Player of the Year race. Long shot, put a small bid on it. We're feeling like I'm in a really good spot with this Julius Randle ticket at 22-1. But Mitch Moss and I were texting each other over the weekend when I was in California, which, by the way, why the last weekend episode got delayed. I had to fill in on the nightcap, trade deadline, went to California. So I apologize very much for that. I appreciate you coming back as well. But I was texting with Mitch Moss over the weekend, and I'm in the middle of writing the intro to my game notes about Zion Williamson. And Zion Williamson has been absolutely incredible. I think we all know how great Zion Williamson has been over the past, I mean, it seems like a month now. And we'll get to that too, because there's injury news about him. But Zion Williamson has been absolutely nuts as of late. Went on that stretch where we're talking about, what, 4 games of shooting at least 65% from the floor. He's been such a massive deal, such a massive piece, I should say, for a Pelicans team that has all of a sudden thrust itself into play-in contention with the way that it's been playing as of late. Pelicans are 4-1 straight up and against the spread their last 5 games. They are 7-2 against the spread in their last 9. And all of a sudden, find themselves right now a game and a half outside of the 10 seed of Memphis. Tied with Sacramento. Sacramento's got the lead in the tiebreakers, I believe, which is why they're up ahead of them in terms of win percentage right now. Oh, they have one extra game. Excuse me. They have one extra game. So they're pushing. But part of the reason Mitch and I were talking was because Zion, not only from a scoring perspective, has been absolutely incredible if you look at some of his numbers, but the point of my piece that I was referring to was that how Zion has improved as a passer this year, because Stan Van Gundy has started to wake up a little bit over the last month and thought, yeah, you know what? I'll let him run some pick and rolls and let him run my offense. The first half of the season, Zion Williamson averaged about 2.2 assists per game. The last half of the season that he's played up to this point, he's averaged 4.4 assists per game. He's been absolutely nuts in terms of his ability to facilitate. And the scoring as well. If you go back his last 25 games, 28.4 points per game, 64.5% shooting, and 4.3 assists for Zion Williamson. It's Freudian slip, right? Freudian slip. Zion's been awesome. And so I put a little bit on him at 100-1 to win most value, or to most improved, excuse me, win most improved player. Because in reality, I think sometimes, and I'm guilty of this as well, obviously. So I say we, the collective we again. Like, I think I let my thinking get shaped by the odds. And I do think that's a mistake, and I've talked about that before. Like, for example, if Julius Randle is the odds on favorite right now to win most improved, that does not mean that's what the voters are thinking right now. You know, there's plenty of hardcore topics that aren't out in mainstream, like, sports media, right? Because mainstream sports media doesn't follow the league on a day-to-day basis. And there's things that we could miss, which is why I think it helps a lot to listen to a lot of these other podcasts and read a lot of these writers' work, because you can get an idea for some of these awards. But look, Zion Williamson is in the forefront of the conversation, and his ability as a passer and his ability to run pick and rolls has been at the forefront of the conversation. And how much does that influence voters' minds? And you bettors out there can still get him at 100-1. That was over at BetMGM that I bet it. And I think it's well worth it in putting a little bit on, especially, you know, considering the place that I'm at with Julius Randle. Feel a little comfortable to get off of that and put a little bit more on Zion Williamson. But, and again, it's not that much, but I just feel like that's worth a shot if you can get him at 100-1. Some shops have him as low as 30-1 to win most improved. Those 100-1 again, which I got at BetMGM, is totally worth looking at. And the news, by the way, on Zion Williamson, apparently, according to Shams Charania, God, this guy, this kid, I learned the other day, I was listening to the Levitard show. Kid's like 26? Come on. That's incredible. When I was 26, I was a producer for an afternoon drive show in Las Vegas. This dude's running NBA media almost. But he suffered, Zion Williamson, a sprained thumb against the Boston Celtics. Game that they won, he avoided a serious injury. There was actually fears that he could have been out multiple weeks, but not expected that he should miss much time, if any. So we'll see if he's going to be on the floor in the next couple of days. But keep an eye on that as we move forward. Doug Kazarian is going to be with us on the other side. I wanted to note one thing. We did record this yesterday, so you'll hear a little bit of some dated conversation. Not a lot, but it's going to center mostly around the Lakers and no mention of the Drummond injury or Zion injury. You know, we did this right before all the news came out. So please excuse that, especially with the Harden conversation that we have there. And also wanted to note that Doug, just like I do, still likes LaMelo Ball to win Rookie of the Year. And that price, by the way, went from 2 to 1, 220, now to plus 175. So if you can jump on it now, because I think I was wrong in my theory that those odds are just going to get longer for one LaMelo Ball. With that, please enjoy Doug's hearing. And please, if you could, it would be very much appreciated if you're listening to my voice right now. Like, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It helps us out very much so. And even if the reviews is negative and you want something to improve, always open to criticism. Always like feedback as well. So you can please, please like, rate, review, subscribe, Hardwood Handicappers.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast, only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
All right, let's welcome in our guest for this week's edition of Hardwood Handicappers, Doug Kazarian, Daily Wager host, ESPN sports betting analyst as well, Behind the Bets podcast as well. You can follow him on Twitter at DougESPN. And a rare type, Doug, I find it hard to find people like you, like an Aaron Renning, us folks who really thoroughly enjoy the NBA from like game one to game, well, this season at 72, are very hard to come by.
It's surprising and good to be with you, JBT. I appreciate the invite and I appreciate all your responses to my text messages blowing you up every day about handicapping that next card or discussing futures. But, you know, to that point, there are so few of us out there. And I don't know what to say because, look, I grew up in L.A., heart of the Showtime era. So for me, like NBA was like my thing since I was a kid because of Magic, Kareem, everything. And then Shaq and Kobe after that. So I only know the NBA, right? Like, I only know one way. I do have friends that don't love it and other that, but it is surprising the people in our gambling space who are not, you know, into the NBA as much as you, like you and I are. Like, I'm a junkie. I get it. I watch all the games, even the late night bad Sacramento Kings stuff. But I would think there'd be more handicappers because there are opportunities there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, selfishly, I've said this before, Doug. Part of the reason why I've kind of carved out the NBA niche was I was like, there's not that many people who do this. Like, why not try to get in on some fertile ground and try to attack it on a night-to-night basis, especially from like a mainstream, an MSM standpoint. Like, you know, there's not a lot going on in that regard. So, and I think a lot of people would be surprised, and you know this, you know, being out here in your time, Las Vegas is quietly a basketball town. You know, growing up, it was the Rebels. And in my late high school years, they were a pretty relevant program under Rice early on and going into my college years, too. And then it's a big Lakers town as well. And I think people would be surprised to hear that. But the basketball influence is actually pretty heavy out here. And that helped me at least really carve out a niche and enjoy the sport, you know?
Yeah, when I worked at Channel 13, which is a local ABC affiliate in Las Vegas prior to joining ESPN in 2012. So I was here 05 to 12, obviously peak Kobe, Pau Gasol. And Vegas at the time was kind of jokingly called an L.A. suburb. And a large reason for the fan base was definitely a Laker town. Now, there's obviously it's a transient city and a lot of transplants from all over the country. But there is always a buzz when the Lakers are at their peak and the basketball town. We're getting many years removed. But when UNLV at its peak, there was nothing like it out here. So I do agree that it is a basketball town. It's a sports town, too. I mean, it's the fight capital of the world, obviously. But when the Lakers move the needle like they did with the Kobe years and all that, it certainly resonates here in this L.A. suburb.
this is a hardcore reference, but there is nothing like in October back in the day, a Kings Lakers preseason game at the Thomason Mack Center. I mean, those were packed.
Yeah, especially with the Maloofs owning the Kings, you know, at the time, and it was packed. And you know, Lakers would have their kind of like rookie hazing event. They do some golf outings. They did a celebrity poker tournament here, sort of just embracing the Vegas sort of a component to preseason. But look, my thing with the NBA is for all the reasons or almost all the reasons that people kind of say they hate betting it, are all the reasons I like betting it. You know, the crazy comebacks, the nonsense. Well, that's why live wagering is great, right? They don't play defense. Sometimes they mail it in. It's like, yeah, well, if you can sniff out those flat spots or whatever, it's a great opportunity to make some money. So I thoroughly enjoy watching the NBA. I think anytime you get athletes, the best of the best in their sport, I'm a junkie, but I also do think there are ways to monetize it as well.
Dude, like the other day, so I was sitting with Tim Murray, our host of the Nightcap here on VSiN, and we were watching in studio the Washington Wizards and the Knicks. It was the second game of their two-game set they had last week. And the Knicks were down, I think they were like 14 in the third quarter. And he's like, man, you know, I kind of like Washington should have played it. And I was like, don't worry. Wizards got plenty of time to blow this. But that's just like the sport of basketball. And sure enough, the Knicks come back and they actually win that game and cover. But that's why I'm also surprised to your point. Like, you're down going into the fourth quarter, down 17. I'm still alive, baby. This is fine.
Yeah. No, it's I like to set up middles too. I mean, I think, you know, I've talked about it a lot on air, my own pod. It's just for something that has this kind of fluctuation, embrace the ridiculousness, right? So if you get, let's just assume -110 on both sides, there's ways to get 20-1. You know, when you factor in a middle and you get pretty good middles because of the volatility in the live wagering and the actual game on the court.
Yep. All right. Well, we did that big long lead in, and you mentioned it properly, as I knew you would, your love for the Los Angeles Lakers. We've been kind of covering teams with our guests on like a one-off basis. You know, last week we had Nate Kreckman on to talk about the Nuggets. So I figure it's fitting to talk about the Lakers and to bring you in on this conversation. So I will ask you this first initially, and I think I know the answer to this, because anytime somebody asks me, I have the same answer. Are you worried about the Los Angeles Lakers? Because my answer is, nah, like, it's hard to be because their issues availability. It's hard to evaluate what they are. But are you worried about the Lakers?
In what capacity? In terms of long-term, trying to repeat?
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Yeah, like long-term, as they have sat back, and of course the injuries have held them back. But the league around them has evolved, mainly the Nets look relatively decent, although I want to ask you about them later because they're a pretty fascinating study. But just overall, as the league takes shape and the Lakers kind of stand pat with the injuries, big picture-wise, championship-wise, are you worried about them?
For sure, for sure. I mean, look, they were not really – I mean, they were the betting favorite, but they weren't the highest power-rated team last year. They just Clippers self-destructed, and then we learned a little bit more about the Bucks. It was sort of a three-horse race, so to speak. And then to your point, other teams – have made moves and narrowed the gap, but there's a reason it's hard to go back to back in all sports. But even the NBA, which has sort of the more predictable outcomes with the best of seven format, it's hard because you have to get lucky. The thing that concerns me the most is AD. You know, we talk very like, oh, it'll be fine once they get him back. Like, I don't know. Like, it's an Achilles. It's a guy with an injury history. No one's 100%. You know, there's just so much that has to go right. Their chemistry last year was really good. And especially on defense, they were very connected, the best defensive team wire to wire. And you just wonder about, you know, the hunger on a team that won already. Now, it's good to bring in new blood like they did with Schroeder and Montrez. But you just wonder a little bit if their shooting will disappear like it did in the month of February prior to LeBron's injury, or will it be like it was in December and January? So my thing with the Lakers is I'm always worried as a fan. I'd still take them in a best of seven against anyone in the West. But we're starting to see the Clippers kind of reach that next gear. I'm not so sold on the Andre Drummond stuff. Maybe it'll work. If he really is kind of polished offensively rather than just like a good stats, bad team guy, then they're going to be more of a half-court team. And I will say this. I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt. LeBron has been excellent in resurrecting players, so to speak. He'll get Drummond to play the right way, to fit into their kind of system. And Frank Vogel's been great. Let's not sleep on that. He was great in Indiana. He was great last year, obviously. It's not an easy job to be the head coach of a LeBron team, but he did wonders. And I think they're going to be obviously a force, but I'm also looking to fade them hard until then.
Yeah. Well, and so the Drummond thing, right? One of the things that I think that I like generally about the signing, because a lot of people are like, all right, you know, is it the missing piece? I don't know if it's so much the missing piece, but you know this. You watched the team really closely last year. I think people would be surprised to hear the statement, they missed Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, but they were glass cleaners, right? Like, they were second chance point guys, offensive rebound guys. We don't need much out of you. Just grab some misses for us and you know, get it out to some open shooters or finish them back yourselves. Drummond can kind of provide that. So I feel like in a limited role, if he buys into just glass cleaning bro who can finish and maybe kick it back out, I think he's a decent pickup, especially because Gasol's not that guy.
Well, exactly. And we learned this. I want to go back to when Paul Pierce was in Brooklyn. This was the first time we really sort of saw it, is that the team that starts is different in the playoffs than it is in the regular season. Like, Paul Pierce played the four in the postseason, but he could not do that physically for 82 games in the regular season. So we talk about this Lakers team, like, AD is going to play the five a lot in the playoffs. He just doesn't want to do it through the course of the entire regular season. So there may be a time where Drummond is relegated to the bench in that Dwight Howard role, or he's an offensive focus when LeBron's on the bench. They bring him in 4 minutes to go in the first quarter, or maybe they tweak and do go Twin Towers a little bit because AD can play away from the hoop as a four. So they have a lot of flexibility. And that's what was nice about Gasol, is he can play at the three-point line and be a passing big if they want to put LeBron or AD at the block. So that there was some versatility with Gasol that you don't necessarily have with Drummond, but there's ways to work around it, like stagger the minutes. And again, that's what it comes back to, kind of Vogel. Like, they'll figure it out. And LeBron does command such respect. I mean, these guys, kind of like Drummond, grew up watching LeBron, so he'll get buy-in from guys like that.
So as we stand right now, it has not gone insanely well since they have lost LeBron James. How bad does this get? Because the chatter is starting, hey, you know, only five games ahead of Dallas, who's in control of that seven seed right now, that play-in spot. How realistic is it, given the nature of Anthony Davis, according to Vogel, being, quote, a ways away? LeBron timetable, 4 to 6 weeks. I think we're approaching the second week coming up this weekend since his injury. Do you think they flirt with a play-in game?
100%. That's an easy answer. They're going to flirt with it. Now, when LeBron comes back and what they ultimately end up with, that's the question. If I had to pick, I'd probably say six seed, but there's no way I'd bet on it. I mean, yeah. I could see them in the play-in, in the play-in tournament, so to speak, having to win one of two games for sure. I mean, look, they are really bad without LeBron and AD, of course. They were bad with LeBron and without AD and Schroeder. So, like, their three best players, if you miss two of them, they're going to be really bad. And we saw the other contenders get much better. I think Denver and Portland are way better. Now, obviously, Portland was just getting healthy, but I do like the Norman Powell acquisition. I think it just gives them another playmaker, so to speak. And Denver, with Aaron Gordon, like, that's the guy they were missing. And I really think, for me, the Nuggets are legitimized with that trade. I did not take them seriously, even after beating the Clippers from coming back from down 3-1 and reaching the Western Conference Finals. To me, they were never a championship threat. They just weren't. But now they are. Like, I think Gordon is that, because defensively he can guard the Kawhi, LeBron, sort of that position, and they just needed another guy who can play off Jokic really well. He can kind of fill in the gaps on the baseline if Jokic is running high post. So there's just a lot to like with those two teams, and I think they're going to make a push here.
Yep. I completely agree with that. That was the one, as the trade deadline passed and I studied it a little bit more, the one I came really in on, because, you know, it's surprising that, you know, they're the 30th ranked rim defense in the league and they really struggle to keep teams from within 4 feet of the basket. Gordon's going to help. Like, I just really like, Doug, when teams go out and address a clear need, and they did that. And not only with Gordon, you know, McGee pickup as well. Like, those are two guys that are going to help them in that regard. Like, their biggest weakness was addressed. And I just can't help but love that. You know,
yeah, and it's crazy that we have to mention it as an outlier. Like, all teams should do this. A lot of teams get cheap. Like, I used to say, you know, obviously Jerry Buss did wonders with the Lakers, but he would kind of get cheap and try to just win, right? Like, the times where they had to start Slava Medvedenko, and then they had no backup point guard sometimes. Like, all those years, like just go get the guy. You spend all this money, you do this max deal on these guys, and then you don't finish it off with, like, doing the extra little bit to make the team, like, perfect in terms of complementing one another. A lot of teams just botch things like that. They don't finish it off. Like, you know, the Utah Jazz have done a wonderful job of building their team, adding the right pieces, kind of sticking to the game plan, building around Donovan Mitchell and Gobert, and then getting Conley, which was like the perfect guy they needed. They didn't need to go get, you know, whoever, like a better player per se, but they just needed a Mike Conley, and go do that, and you're just the sum of the parts, you know, whatever that saying is, the whole is greater, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. All right, so before we get to some other big picture stuff, last thing on the Lakers. So the thing that I have been doing with Los Angeles since they've lost LeBron James is betting their games under. And I haven't bet every single game under. I wish I have. I think they're like 1-5 to the under if you include the Hawks game. Two-part question. Does this offense improve at all as we move forward? Because we're talking about in the six games since LeBron's injury, highest offensive rating of 103.5, and that has led to these games going under the total. When does this well run dry? Because I just don't see their offense really improving until LeBron comes back.
The first thing I said when we reacted on set, Daily Wager, to the LeBron injury was team total under.
Yeah.
Matt Eumanns on your network always has jokingly called me the amateur psychologist, because you really kind of have to assess these teams, especially when it's a long season of, in this case, 72 games. You kind of just have to kind of understand what the make. Like, this team doesn't care what seed they are. This team is not about going all in and beating like the Pelicans or the Sixers or whatever. Like, they need to get wins against Orlando and Cleveland. They kind of understand that. Like, I think they roll over tonight against the Bucks. I think Milwaukee crushes them. So in terms of like, are they going to reshape the offense just to appease Drummond until LeBron gets back? Like, they're built around LeBron. He's the playmaker. He surveys everything, and he has shooters around him. And those guys aren't getting as good a looks as they used to with LeBron not there to drive to the hoop and just really consume attention, even if it's in the block or the elbow extended. So I mean, Drummond should help, right? Like, he should be a good stats, bad team guy even there. But I still think ultimately they're a bad team, and team total unders are probably the way to go.
All right. So you mentioned getting cheap when it came to acquisitions. You know, look, the Clippers didn't really have a choice given the hole that they dug themselves in with everything, the way they constructed their roster and their draft assets. They get in Rajon Rondo. I want to ask bigger picture about the Pacific Division. The addition of Rondo, you watched him up close last year. Playoff Rondo is a topic of conversation, I guess, at times. Playoff Rondo is a thing, I guess, to a certain extent. He shot 40% last year. When I think of Playoff Rondo, I think of that Pelican series when he was with New Orleans, where he just completely destroyed the Portland Trailblazers and had like a 21-assist game. I don't know if they get that, though. Like, I hated and kind of liked the Clippers' acquisition of Rondo. What did you think?
Well, I like what Ryan Russillo says. Playoff Rondo exists because regular season Rondo exists, right?
Correct.
Like, that's the bad part, right? Like,
that's a good, yeah.
So... But I will say he was incredible with the Lakers last year in the playoffs. First game back, not so much, but that was the rust. And don't forget about that run with the Bulls. Remember he like broke his finger and they won the first two games in Boston?
Don't get me started. I bet them. I remember that distinctly because I had them at 850 to win that series.
Yeah.
And they went up 2-0 against Boston, the one seed. And yeah,
on
he broke
road.
His hand.
Yeah, on
yep.
the road, yeah. So he, for whatever, look, he's a savant out there. That's why LeBron loves him, is because the guy sees the court better than most. He's obviously got his issues and takes ridiculous shots sometimes, but he sees things, and there is something to the locker room, right? Like, there is a cheesy coach speak component that's actually true. I said this when the Bucks went and got Brady. It's like, look, he's going to teach him how to prepare to win. I mean, there's an element of whatever he's doing, showing up early, last guy to leave, all that kind of corniness. There's some truth in all of that. So a guy like Rondo is needed for a team like the Clippers that obviously unraveled last year in the bubble. To sum it up, my understanding for the Clips was that Paul George was the vocal leader, but he did not command the respect from the teammates that, you know, like a number one guy would. Kawhi did command it because of his ability, but didn't have the vocal part. So that's why there was a little bit of a power struggle. Then you throw in Patrick Beverley, and then it gets kind of messy, right? So a guy like Rondo could sort of, you know, demonstrate and kind of say, hey, guys, I got the rings here. I've played with KG and Pierce. I've played with LeBron. We've won titles together. This is how you have to behave. Kawhi can kind of like be there in a complimentary vocal role. And then all of a sudden, your team can have some, you know, championship pedigree. And you even got Ibaka there as well.
Yep.
So I think it's a good move. I just don't know, like, the drop-off defensively. Yeah, he gets steals or whatever. But Beverly's, when you have Beverly and you have Kawhi and you have PG, you have some incredible defensive players. And there was a game where they played the Warriors and all of them kind of shut down Steph together. Mm-hmm. There's something to that. And let's face it, they were up 20 or whatever against the – I mean, we're talking about like one comeback, a couple shots down the stretch. They easily could have reached the Western Conference Finals, and we have a different conversation right now. Yep. So I, it's not – it moves the needle a little bit, but not that much for me.
So as we look right now, the Clippers are about – and this is one spot. DraftKings has them minus 335 to win the division. The Suns are plus 180. So two-part question. The second part you probably can't answer because you'll see. The Suns, why can't the market and John Von Tobel just buy into the Suns? Like, why can't I sit back and go, this team is freaking on. Like, they're top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. They're a top two team in terms of net rating, Doug. And yet when I watch them, and if anybody were to ask me, give me three or four teams that can win the title, I just wouldn't include the Suns.
Well, I'm like a Suns expert because I have tickets on them at plus 850, 550, 500, and even 330 to win the Pacific.
Okay.
And the last few weeks after LeBron injury has just been torture because you get the LeBron injury, but then you lose to Minnesota, Orlando, Indiana at home. It's been painful. And this team had to go to overtime, blew it. So they are the classic good regular season team. They take care of business for the most part. Obviously, suffered some losses I just mentioned. But the regular season is a different animal. There's always a team or two or three that just takes the regular season a little too seriously. We saw it with the Rockets and Chris Paul being the common thread when they had to get the one seed over and wanted to take down the Warriors. This Bucks team with Coach Buds, the Hawks team with Coach Buds. There's always teams that just go all in and try to like dominate and set the tone. They forget that it's a marathon, not a sprint. But come playoff time in a best of seven series, their home court's not that significant. I'm just not taking the Suns to win more than a series, maybe two, get the conference finals. They just don't scare me. I think Booker should take more of a, you know, get the ball, demand the ball a little bit more. But I don't like it. I mean, they play Frank Kaminsky way too many minutes. They play he's been fine, but Cameron Payton's not good. He's just not good. So I just, there's too many guys on the court at the same time who just, I don't trust.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
All right, good. So I'm glad I'm not big championship wise. Yeah. I can't really buy into it. The division thing is crazy because to your point, I mean, as invested as you are, everything that you mentioned, and by the way, like the Clippers get their shit together all of a sudden, right? When the door opens because the Lakers start to fall because of injuries.
And it's painful because I saw them Clippers just a few days ago, right, minus -140 at BetMGM, but that now has moved to 240, but now back to $2, and probably Clips minus 200 is probably the right move. But even then, like, you think it's a big game against the Bucks the other night, and Paul George doesn't play. Now they got the win by double digits, no less. But you would think that they're going to go all in and try to, but like, they don't care if they're the two or the three seed. They probably prefer to avoid the four seed, to avoid playing the Jazz in the second round. But who knows where the Lakers end up? Maybe the four seed's better because you avoid the Lakers in the first round. So I just think they're kind of all in, the Suns. And so that's why I liked it. I just thought we'd get some load management down the stretch. But at this point, it's probably in my best interest to hedge and lay the $2 right now with the Clippers because I think the Lakers are a lost cause. I think it's a two-horse race right now. Yeah.
So one more big picture championship type deal. And this is more just like a power rating type of conversation. I was looking at this the other day, and, you know, it depends on where you shop, but the Brooklyn Nets under $2 in some spots. We're talking about, obviously, to win the Eastern Conference. You're talking about some futures in terms of championships as well, plus 260 in that range. It's amazing to me, Doug, that this team is power rated as high as it is, and we really haven't seen the complete version. Like, this is that. Like, I just can't wrap my head around it. Like, I think they're going to be this good. I think the power rating is accurate, but it's also something that I'm projecting and that we haven't really seen on the court yet.
You know, it's crazy because we hear this phrase a lot, if they stay healthy. And that's usually just like, basically if they avoid landmines, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not a throwaway comment with Brooklyn because there are legit injury concerns. I mean, this Durant thing's been lingering for a while. Like, where is he, right? And then the Kyrie has some injury history there as well. So it is fascinating that they are now the clear favorite at the betting menus and betting boards to win it all. But we don't know about them, but they're by far is a strong thing. They are the clearly the best team in the East, I think. I just think in this day and age, when you have all these possessions and the three-pointer, like, no one can match them offensively. And they're such brilliant minds basketball-wise that they'll just figure it out. Like, even in the preseason when there was rumblings that Harden might get traded to Philly or Brooklyn, I'm like, there's always enough balls to go around. There is in basketball. Right. Like, they'll just figure it out. Like, there, you can stagger the minutes. But the regular season's a different animal. I mean, remember when the Heat and Spurs were really good, and then we'd get all excited for their, like, regular season matchup out of conference. They'd play each other one, you know, each other's home court. But then, like, Pop sat everyone on one time, and then, like, yep. the Heat sat everyone but Bosch on the other time. Like, they don't want to show their cards. They don't want to show the other coach how they plan to defend their studs. I just think the regular season is just a different animal. And I don't think – I think they're – like, the league now knows it, and they're very reluctant to go all in. But to your point, like, at some point, the Nets got to figure out, like, what works and how they all play off each other. Obviously, a big step – I mean, we've already forgotten about it, but remember Kyrie told Harden, you're the point guard. We're going through you now. And, like, that year the Heat won it, Wade – told LeBron, you're the guy, and they sort of figured it out. Like, there needs to be some sort of work in progress element to this, and you can only really do that when everyone's playing.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't forgotten, because I am the constructor of the James Harden MVP train. We are accepting yes. all entries if you'd like. Anybody can come aboard. It is free of charge. So let's get into this conversation. But first, before we get to the other stuff, I wanted to ask you, you alluded, we were having a back and forth on Twitter the other day. You kind of alluded to your own candidate outside of the Jokic-Harden dynamic, which has kind of taken the headlines with this MVP debate. So who is the guy in your mind outside of these two that are at the forefront of the conversation right now?
So I actually started it, and I don't want to quite put myself in the same category as you with Harden, because it's not as vocal and not as busy. But I started the Dame MVP thing like a month and a half ago, and yeah. he was 40-1 at William Hill. And our Caesar studio is on top of the Link. And so I have to leave the casino, the Link casino, every day to go to my car. And like, I just couldn't stop. I always stopped at the kiosk. I couldn't help myself. I just continued to keep betting 40-1 and 40-1. I have like 9 tickets of 40-1 because I was like, all right, this is my last one. And then I like did it again. And like, it's just, it was ridiculous to me because Nurkic and McCollum were coming back. And I think this is when you start having to handicap, the voters as much as you handicap the players. But first, right. let me say this. There's an element of this that I'm sick of talking about, it, right? Like the MVP. And I'll say this. It reminds me of when Romo was hurt and Dak was playing great. I believe it was a rookie season. And it was like week 5. And everyone's like, what's going to happen when Romo comes back week 12? I'm like, well, let's just wait to see how Dak does 7 weeks. And then we'll revisit it the week he's healthy. Like, it was stupid sports radio talk. I don't think sports radio people should be discussing the MVP as much as they are. I think it's nonsense. I just think it's filler. There's so many other things to discuss because it's such a projection award. Now, us in the betting space should absolutely be doing it, but in the betting sort of lens of projecting to the end of the season. So I think when you get break down that, I think it matters to put it all the math out there, how long Embiid's going to be out and how long LeBron's going to be out, because that does matter. There's really no precedent. So I did some research, and this is based on 82 games. The strike shortened seasons don't really apply because the MVPs that year played nearly the entire season. But Bill Walton, Bob Cousy, and Bill Russell all played fewer than 70 games in their MVP campaigns. But that was a long time ago, right? The year Walton won in 78, he actually played 58 of 82 games, which is kind of crazy. Just 20, you know. He's the only MVP to miss at least 13 games the year he won the award. So LeBron and Embiid, it's really hard. Now, if there's ever a year something weird's going to happen, it could be this year. Quick turnaround for the Lakers after the bubble. Don't have the usual 4 or 5 months. And LeBron, I'm convinced, is going to come back sooner from this injury than we see with others because he's just a cyborg. And you wonder if he's still in the mix. So I actually think if someone wanted to bet LeBron at whatever he is, 6-1 or so, I couldn't fault you at all. Now, so the Dame thing, I think, and we'll get to Harden in a moment, but I do think it's as stupid as whichever team, Denver or Portland, gets that 4 seed, they'll have the MVP. It reminds me of the year Kobe won his MVP. It was like 08, I want to say. And I remember just screaming, like, this is so stupid. The Lakers finished with the 1 seed. Charlotte finished with the 2 seed, 1 game back. And Kobe won MVP over CP3 because of that. Even though CP3 was, in every definition of the word, more valuable, right? Yep. And I think the PERs were comparable and everything. Now I'm fine with Kobe winning it. It was his only award, a little bit of a career achievement award. But you're telling me the Lakers finishing one game above Charlotte, but like with the difference in the MVP race, it was just kind of silly. But that's what happens with the voters. Team success matters. So I've been saying Jokic has no chance, but because of the injuries to Embiid and LeBron, I'm now sort of changed my stance on that. I say he's a chance. He's the odds on favorite. First time anyone's been odds on. But I've been the last guy. I've been doubting it the whole time. Just because, let me ask you this, JVT. Do you know the MVP that is not in the Hall of Fame? MVPs, like all of them, that are not in the MVP. Excuse me, they're not in the Hall of Fame.
I do not.
Okay. It's a trick question. MVP is in the Hall of Fame. And the only one who will not be is probably Derrick Rose. And that's obviously because of injuries. So my point is, the voters like take it really seriously. Is like they don't like buyer's remorse, so to speak. So they want it to be like a great player and not a guy who's just like, it's a weird sort of combination of team success, truly defining the word valuable, but also like best player in the league. And it's just sort of a hodgepodge of those three things that you really have to handicap and makes it tough. Where I thought Jokic really didn't have sort of that career achievement element that like, and it was a fascinating race, mm-hmm. But now Jokic is sort of like, I mean, he's been an animal stats wise. And if they get the 4 seed and stop blowing stupid games like they have most of the season, I can see him because of the injuries to LeBron and because of the injury to Embiid. And we'll see about Harden. Obviously, Harden's right there in the mix. But I think Jokic is going to win it if they get the 4 seed. Now, if the Blazers get it, I actually think Dame's going to make a charge.
Yeah. See, so I wrote about this a couple of times at the website. And I think there's really no question. And I did at the All-Star break, Doug, I wrote a case for and case against for the top 7 guys, each one of them.
Love it.
And what I wrote about for Lillard was, I think anecdotally, there is no question that he has the best case for MVP, right? Like your top 2 running mates go out, you maintain the pace in terms of winning with your team, you could still be a top 4 seed in the Western Conference, and from a betting perspective, which not many, if any, voters will take into account, still potentially on pace to surpass your win total. Like anecdotally, those are all insane things that Damian Lillard has helped out with his team. So I completely get behind this. I find this is more of a tell me if I'm wrong type of deal. My hesitancy with a guy like Jokic is, one, you mentioned the weird blowups. Like last week, what the fuck was that Toronto game, right? Like Toronto has like nothing going for them. I don't know what's happening here. The number's a little weird, but it gets bet up to like 2.5 and they get their doors blown off. And you know, Jokic is a part of that. And I can't help but like look at Jokic and the Nuggets, Doug, and think, you're supposed to be the MVP, but you're the starting center on literally the worst rim defense in the entire NBA. And defensively, I've gotten so much scrap, you know, guff from all these Nuggets fans. Like, he's might have gotten better defensively, but every single metric defensively points to the fact that he is a subpar defender that plays into one of the biggest weaknesses of his team. Now, we can talk about Harden because I think there's numbers that, you know, obviously that. But am I wrong in that being why I hold Jokic back from winning this award?
100% agree, and that's why I liked your idea of doing a pro and a con. There's no clear-cut MVP because of the injuries to Embiid and LeBron. I mean, Embiid was the favorite for a reason, both ends of the court, and then LeBron became the favorite, and then he got hurt. And it's a year that's already was pretty deep in terms of candidates, and now because of the injuries just makes it that much more fascinating. So I'm right there with you, and I think it's fair. I mean, I think a lot of the reasons Dame is an MVP candidate are the reasons you can, you know, kind of like, they don't typically blow that. Like, he's known as like a great leader. I mean, again, it's corny, but Dame is that franchise. He carries them. He has those MVP moments, those game winning shots, like the step back against Steph and the Warriors right before the All-Star break that literally, I don't think, hit the net. It went straight through the hoop. Yep. And it was by the like little hash mark by the coach's box. So, but I mean, Jokic has plenty of highlights too, but it's like, if there's a will in the MVP sort of just narrative, that I think Dame has that edge because he kind of has the willpower and leadership qualities. Now, Jokic can't do it alone. He needs help, but he has a guy who dropped 50 this year as a teammate. And there are players on that team. So I think there is a reason that Jokic was like, even when he was putting up 6 stats, was still 8-1 behind LeBron and Embiid, but maybe this year could just break for the guy.
Yep. And then you get to Harden, because a lot of the rebuttal for me has been, well, Harden can't defend a potato. Harden's garbage. And you know what? Like, statistically, if you look at some numbers, defensive real plus minus, Harden's a pretty poor defender. My rebuttal to a lot of that is Jokic is a piss poor defender, defensive real plus minus, which I think, and you know this, you work at ESPN, which chronically actually inflates the numbers of taller players and centers. So it's actually pretty bad that Jokic is a poor defensive real plus minus player. But regardless, the one thing it comes down to defensively are two things for me, Doug. If we're parsing between Harden and Jokic, clutch numbers, guess who's got the better defensive rating by, we'll call it a mile, but it's relatively solid, 112 to 107. It's James Harden. If we're talking about on-court, off-court numbers, James Harden on the court defensive rating for Brooklyn improves. When Jokic is on the court, their defensive rating inflates by about 7 points. Those things make the difference for me. If we're talking about why do I have Harden ahead of Jokic, on top of all the narrative stuff we can discuss with, you know, Brooklyn, I don't think even sniffs the one seed right now like they are without Harden. That's, to me, the difference between those two. Is that fair?
I think it's more than fair, for sure. I just think the negatives on Harden are gonna really hamper him. But I think that is sort of fading a little bit here and there, and who knows what it's going to be like in a couple months. This Harden's a really interesting test case, because when I was talking about earlier about the buyer's remorse thing, I do think his playoff disappearances still resonate with voters. I do think there's a consensus that while he is an offensive wizard, he is not the best player in the league. I think obviously now losing to the Warriors, especially when they had Durant, is nothing to sneeze at, but just the passing and giving it up, not wanting the ball and some of that stuff, and just flameouts like no other. It just shows that he's sort of like a regular season Warrior. And there's a little bit of, falsehood with some of the stats, and that's just the NBA in general. But I mean, look, we're talking about splitting hairs, right? We're finding blemishes on a beauty pageant. So I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying he's an all-time, not a great player, whatever. I'm saying we're splitting hairs because we're allowed to do this under a microscope. And he has demonstrated at times to be not that special, like LeBron and those guys. I think the voters take that very seriously. It goes back to kind of the Derrick Rose thing I was talking about. Now, obviously, Harden's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But there is a little like Giannis has no chance. Okay, he just doesn't, unless everyone else gets injured, because the Bucks aren't. I mean, he's been great, but there's holes in his game, and there's a little bit of buyer's remorse voting Giannis over LeBron last year by some of the voters. There just is, because Giannis is not as dominant as he kind of appears to be statistically and in the regular season. I think Harden's got an element of that, and the shenanigans in Houston. That was 11%, as Zach Lowe has written about. I also think just like the complete violation of COVID protocol, I do think there's an optics component to this that this is pure speculation. I have not talked to any of my colleagues that do have a vote, but I don't think Silver wants that. Like, I just don't think Adam Silver wants like Harden winning the MVP this year, given how it all went down in Houston. I just don't think he wants that.
Yeah, but he's making a ton. And actually, I'm glad you brought up Lowe. You know, he put out a podcast today. Today's Wednesday, by the way, recording this. Or was it yesterday? He had Mina Kimes on, and he noted in the podcast that Harden is winning voters over. So, you know, there's a big distance between the first part of the season and the last.
100%. 100%. Hey, that's totally fair.
Yeah. And look, like, I think I've gone over the numbers. He had, two 30-point games, a 40-point game. The Houston thing, I understand it. For those who tell me that I am clouded in my judgment, you're damn right, because I have been driving this train. And,
we all are.
Right. I was going to say, I like when people throw that in my face. It's like, oh, well, you're just biased. Like, yeah, I fucking am. Like, you're damn right I am. I want this guy to win this award.
Well, and I have a great portfolio of Embiid, LeBron at like 6.3 to 1, and high. I have Dame, but I don't have Harden, and I don't have Giannis, and I don't have Jokic, and I have my portfolio is going to be zero probably at the end of the year.
All right, Doug. Hey, before we get you out of here, any other NBA thoughts that have been on your mind, but that you want to share with some of the listeners?
Yeah, no, we've talked about it a bunch on radio hits and things like this, but I think like we Draymond Green, the assist prop, one of my coordinating producers on the show got me on it, and then I obviously ran with it on air a bunch. But there are opportunities in the prop market to really kind of make up for, let me put it this way, this is what I say all the time. Odds makers love like Lakers, Clippers, full strength in a primetime game, doing a point spread of 2.5, whatever it is, right? That's easy for them with the power ratings and everybody full strength. What they don't like are handicapping and trying to come up with a point spread of teams with injuries. Like we talked about with Drummond, like, oddsmakers don't know what the Lakers are going to look like. It's like all a guessing game. It's why the Mayweather McGregor was such a headache to first put out a line. It's an exhibition. Like, they don't know what to do. So when you have these teams that are having sitting three guys, like the Bucks last week, you and I were trying to figure out if it was a Knicks 2-point road favorites at the Bucks when they're sitting like every starter. No one knows, right? There's no precedent. This is, those are the situations where it's really hard for odds makers. So there are prop bet opportunities for maybe like Orlando. Keep an eye on this team that has a completely new starting lineup. Guys like Mo Bamba are shooting threes, blocking shots. There are ways to capitalize in the prop market. And then just situational. When guys sit, don't be afraid to like not bet. Watch the first 5 minutes and kind of get a feel for the game and maybe trust that. That's a better thing. I've always said the closing number is sort of the first time out. Don't be married to that. There's so many opportunities with in-game wagering, especially when you have fluctuation in rosters. You're going to trust. I think it's better to maybe just watch it, jump in at halftime or even just any timeout.
Yep. Doug Gazarian again, Doug ESPN, does a lot of stuff for the sports gambling content over at ESPN, including the host of Daily Wager. Doug, always appreciated, dude, and we'll get you on once the postseason starts.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And JBT, don't think for 1 second that this kind of, you know, alleviates any text messages coming your way. I'm going to still blow you up.
Of course. Anytime.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.